Hi, Goodvach. This is Yisachar Wartel. Sorry I couldn't join you last week. I had a prior engagement, and hoping all of you have been having an amazing Adar, had an amazing Purim, and now we are towards the end, really at the end, of Sefer Shemos. And we have our last two Parshas. That's right, it's a double Parsha. It is Vayakel and Pekudei together. And speaking of which, we're going to be talking about two becoming one. Let's see what I mean. In this week's parsha, we pretty much have a repetition of Truma and Tetzava. There are a lot of nuanced differences. There's a few different things at the end of Pekudei. And obviously, different grammar, but it's largely very much a similar repetition, if you will, for lack of a better term, of Truma and Tetzava. Now, there's many commentaries who address this issue, with the most famous explanation being in the sense that there were two Mishkans, the Mishkan prior to the Chet Egel, or the more ideal form of the Mishkan, right? Prior to the sin of the golden calf, which had a greater and higher purpose and would have had even a greater spirituality and may have even been permanent. In contrast, the Mishkan after the Chet Egel, after the sin of the golden calf, was not just a gift to the Jewish people where Hashem could rest in their presence, but was also necessary. We needed it as a people to be more involved and feel something interesting. One of the suggested reasons why those certain Jewish people created the golden calf was because they needed something physical to help connect them. They no longer had Moshe. He was their go-to person, and they were just used to, you know, growing up in Mitzrayim, right? Even if they were slaves, they saw that people connected to their deities through physical means, right? Whether they're idols or sheep or, you know, gold or whatever it was. So they wanted to connect to Hashem through some kind of physical, you know, whether it being an intermediary or whatever it might be. So Hashem was saying, you're not allowed to have an intermediary. You certainly can't have anything that's anywhere tantamount to Avodah Zarah. The golden calf was absolutely something that was terrible. It was a mistake. But I will give you an additional physical way to connect to me, and that will be through the Avodah and service in the Mishkan. I will be able to rest among you, and you'll be able to connect with me and, in a sense, feel my presence in a more tangible manner. Now, that's actually interesting. It's similar to the second set of Luchot, which were, again, there were handmade, at least the writing was handmade by Moshe, so it was a little bit more physical in that respect, whereas the first set was written by Esbel Hakim with the finger of God. Now that one was the same backwards and forwards, intrinsically more holy and entirely created by Hashem, in contrast to the second one, which Moshe had to carve and write, and it took more human involvement. So the first one was obviously on a much, much higher and more amazing, unfathomable level, but the second one was perhaps on a more relatable level. And really where the Jewish people were, unfortunately, were holding, but it is where they were. Now, this parallel continues many, many years later with the two Batei Mikdash, or the two Beit HaMikdash. The first Beit HaMikdash had the Aron. It had prophecy. It had many, many miracles that didn't exist by the second Beit HaMikdash. During the second Temple period, also following the sin of the majority of Jews not returning from the first exile, the average Jew, by definition, had to be much more involved. Organized prayer was instituted by the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah and others in the early part of the Second Beit HaMikdash period, and less was ultimately done miraculously, and many more miracles were more of a hidden nature, and it operated in a very different platform than the way it did before. Now, this transition is symbolized by the holiday Purim, which we had recently. It was a time where the Jewish people did teshuva, re-accepted the Torah upon themselves, and ultimately paved the way for the Second Beit HaMikdash. In a way, the whole Jewish world and the basic way in which the world operated was v'nahafachu. They weren't going to be relating to Hashem in the exact same way they were before. They weren't going to be connecting in such a miraculous way, but in more of a hidden way and somewhat more of a physical way. Prophecy was starting to come to an end. Miracles were now becoming more hidden. Jews were starting to become more scattered. And much of the time that they had the second Beit HaMikdash, it wouldn't even be under Jewish rule. A lot of things were different. They were upended. They were turned on their head. It even became more different and confusing after the temple's destruction or subsequent exile, and it became completely different. And this is symbolized by the day after Purim. On Purim, hopefully we're on an amazing high, spiritual high, physical high, giving gifts to the needy, handing out shalach manos, you know, spending time with our friends and loved ones, getting together with good food, friends, good food, good wine. But now it's over. We no longer have that high, and many of us may even be feeling a hangover, right? So where do we go from here? We had this amazing high. We had this amazing day. Where do we go? We go to Pesach, right? Adar leads to Nisan. We are cycling back to a time of great and wondrous miracles, because Hashem still wants that to be part of who we see that we are, right? Just because nowadays we live in a time where His miracles might be hidden, we shouldn't think of them as small, insignificant miracles. They can still be great and wondrous the same way the splitting of the sea and the Makos were. Nisan is a time of rebirth and renewed connection of a people rather than individuals. And that parallels the end of our exile and the coming of Mashiach, which, according to Chazal, will arrive in Nisan. And this passage of Adar to Nisan is not just transitional, but it's also a melt. This Shabbos is Shabbos Mevarchim, and we will announce the onset of the month of Nisan. And this Rosh Chodesh coming up is the synthesis of these two worlds, this world of Adar and this world of Nisan. Even more interesting in a leap year, but we're not going there right now. It's a time for the scattered people to become one people. And don't forget, Nisan is actually kind of like in a cyclical way, you know, taking us to Yetziat Mitzrayim, which takes us to the 50 days that we count, which takes us to Shavuos, which is when Kishachai Belevachai. Hashem is allowing us to cycle back, even if it's not perfectly, be able to cycle back to where we were, when we were all one people and we weren't scattered. We weren't scattered physically or mentally or spiritually, whatever it might be. Adar is the 12th month. Nisan is the first, right, according to the way the Torah delineates the Jewish months. In other ways, Rosh Hashanah is the first, but in many ways, Nisan is considered the first month, and often how the Torah talks about it. Right? The Torah calls Nisan the first month. Again, topic for another time. But effectively, the 12th month is Adar, Nisan is the first. When you put 12 and 1 together, when you go from 12 to 1, you start that clock again, 12 plus 1 is 13, which numerically corresponds to Echad, 1. It's also very interesting when you get to Adar Sheni and what the function of that is. But our Parsha of Vayakel also comes out always this time of year. And it contains further symbolism to illustrate this point. Countless times throughout the Parsha, it speaks of two or multiple units becoming one. Here's some examples. V'chaver et ha'ohel v'hiyot echad. Conjoin, for lack of a better word, the tent of meeting of the Mishkan to become one. Shnei adonim tachat ha'keresh echad. Two sockets underneath one plank. V'yachdu hiyu tamim al rasho al tabahat ha'echad. And they shall be together, fitting together upon the head of the one ring. Right? So there's a lot of unification that's mentioned in this week's parsha. So in order to bring merit to carrying everything full circle, which ultimately will come in the bring of Mashiach, or the days of Mashiach, we need to work together. We need to bond together with people until we're one. We need to have a level of unity that has been unprecedented for a very long time. And we have much more means, actually, even though unfortunately we have a lot of things that are more divisive, you know, than ever before. I mean, we actually have the beauty of social media can actually bring more people together and connect people in a much quicker point of time. So it's a double-edged sword. But we have to find ways of coming together and acting in a way that we will want to come together. We may appear to be different parts or have different purposes, but we all fit together to form single units and ultimately one body. Now, the numerical value of Adar, Aleph Dalet Reish, is 205. The value of Nisan is 170. When they're put together, they equal 375, which corresponds to the word sha'a, moment or hour. For we only have a few fleeting moments to seize this opportunity at this threshold between Adar and Nisan. And we have this opportunity to transition back into a time where we once again see ourselves coming out from difficult circumstances together as a nation, as God's chosen people. And we can seize the opportunities to come out and celebrate who we are as a Jewish people and to live our lives in a Torahic manner and an appropriate manner. And sometimes these opportunities, they come and go very quickly. They're often gone in a moment. But let's take advantage of this time that we have, this amazing, auspicious time, this amazing time of the year to reflect on the unity and the development of the Jewish nation. And I also want to once again thank my friend Isaac Kotlicki for helping to solidify an integral part of this Torah. Wishing you all the best and a good Chodesh. Shabbat Shalom.